Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Meghna Chakrabarty is on assignment today. After major surgery, or perhaps a serious accident, the focus of any patient is healing. Frequently, that includes managing pain, and getting the support to manage that pain can be a big challenge. That's what Keosha Johnson wrote about this week, and it's the subject of today's Common Health segment. Keosha is an editor and producer right here at WBUR.org and recently underwent spinal fusion surgery and wrote about her experience on WBUR's Common Health blog. And Keosha, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thanks for letting me be here.
So, Keosha, after surgery, you were prescribed oxycodone to manage your pain, and you wrote about how complicated it became when you tried to get off the medicine. Tell us what happened.
Yes. So after surgery, I was prescribed oxycodone, OxyContin, and Dilaudid. And after I was released from the hospital, I was able to get off everything except the oxycodone. So I stayed on that consistently for 6 weeks and decided to quit cold turkey, which you should actually not do. And I learned the hard way when I went through withdrawal.
So tell us what you experienced when you went through withdrawal.
So within 24 hours of taking the last oxycodone pill, I felt extremely weak. I could only stand up for a few minutes at a time without feeling like I needed to sit down because I felt quite almost like I was going to faint. I had waves of nausea throughout the day and night, and it got worse as the next day came and the next night. In fact, the next night in bed, I was breaking a sweat. I felt very jittery. It felt like I had several cans of Red Bull, and I had to kind of almost twitch. I was stretching one arm out and then the other because the feeling of jitteriness, for lack of a better word, was getting more and more intense. And if I didn't move my upper body, it just felt like something bad was going to happen.
So what did you do?
I took the pills again. And then I called my doctor the next morning, and I said, hey, look, I tried to get off cold turkey, and then they reminded me that you're actually not supposed to do that. And they encouraged me to get back on it, but take half the dosage I'd been taking before and decrease it by half every 4 to 5 days.
So really slowly wean yourself off the drugs.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm actually now off my narcotics for about 72 hours now.
And how do you feel?
I feel good. I mean, right now I have a little less energy than before, but that's about it. I feel great otherwise.
Well, let me introduce Judy Foreman. She's this week's Common Health guest blogger. She's a Boston-based health reporter and nationally syndicated columnist, and she's writing a book about chronic pain called A Nation in Pain, Healing Our Biggest Health Problem. And welcome to you, Judy Foreman.
Thank you very much.
So you heard Keosha's story. Why is managing pain, and in particular this kind of drug, so complicated?
Whoa, that's a big question. For one thing, the kind of pain that she had was acute pain after surgery, which in general in this country we do pretty well with. The actual bigger problem is chronic pain for people who have severe, intense pain forever, basically. The problem that she's talking about is a lot of people call it addiction to opioids, which is kind of the fancy name for narcotics. But it's really the word people really should be using is dependence. There's a big difference between dependence and addiction. Dependence means when you take a drug for a while, your body gets used to it. And then if you stop particularly abruptly, like she did at first, you do go through withdrawal. There's this tremendous agitation, the nausea. Your body, you know, is just like in a hyper flight and fight mode.
So that's what Keosha was experiencing.
That's
right?
Exactly what she was experiencing. Addiction is really different, technically. It's all those feelings of withdrawal, but you know, a tremendous craving for the drug, committing crimes to get the drug, faking prescriptions, taking increasing doses of the drug, even though you know it's doing you harm. And people confuse those two. If you take opioids for any period of time, you will 100% guaranteed become dependent. There's only, and only is in quotes, about an 8 to 10% chance that you'll become addicted. So there's a big difference.
I see. Judy, let me ask you about this. A recent New York Times article quoted an alarming number. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in 2008, 14,800 people died in episodes involving painkillers. The Wall Street Journal reported recently that the sale of prescription painkillers is leading to what it called an epidemic of addiction. Does the U.S. have a problem with opioid or painkiller abuse?
Yes, but it has an even bigger problem with undertreated pain. There's this sort of mass hysteria over opioids, but I have the figures from the government also. The 14,800 people who died with a combination of prescription, partially due to prescription painkillers, that's a true figure. But what the New York Times story did not say, and what people usually forget to mention, is that half of those deaths involved at least one other drug, like heroin or cocaine. So to blame it all on the painkillers is not true. And a lot of those deaths also involved alcohol.
Kiyosha, I want to ask you this question. You were at first a little reluctant to come on our show and talk about your experience. We're very grateful that you did. But tell us a little bit about why.
Frankly, I was embarrassed. I mean, I quit cold turkey thinking I can handle it, regardless of whether I should or shouldn't get off cold turkey. And when I experienced withdrawal, I got nervous. You know, yeah. I had to return to work on oxycodone. I was worried that of what my boss would think if I were to come on air and talk about this. My family's been worried about, you know, if I have to get back on just to feel normal, am I going to need to stay on?
Sure.
So I just felt kind of hesitant.
And Judy, what does that tell you? I mean, the reluctance that Kiyosha initially felt about talking about it seems very poignant to me.
Yeah, there's sort of two things. There's a huge stigma to opioids. There's a huge stigma to pain, too. People don't like to admit they're in pain. They get dismissed. They get told it's all in their head. I mean, there's like two stigmas, the drugs and the pain that underlies it. And it's really a shame that there was a huge report that came out last year from the Institute of Medicine, which is part of the National Academies of Sciences. And they were saying we have to really do a cultural transformation to try to get rid of the stigma of pain and the stigma of these drugs, which basically, in the right hands, can be very effective for people. There's kind of this, they call it opiophobia. I mean, an excessive fear of these drugs, which is not to minimize the painkiller deaths, but it's only half the story. There's all these other people suffering with the pain.
And speaking of the stigma, Kiyosha, you said and wrote about this, that buying your prescription oxycodone after the surgery, even that was a somewhat difficult process, right?
It was very difficult. Actually, right after I was released from the hospital and my next dosage of oxycodone was coming up, I went to refill my prescription and I decided to call my local chain pharmacy to see which store had the oxycodone. And they just wouldn't tell me. They told me that I had to physically go into the store. Keep in mind, I was walking with a cane and clearly needing the medication at that point, and show them my prescription before they would tell me whether or not they had it. And in fact, 2 to 3 of the places that I first went to did not have it. And I had to call the hospital for them to tell me which chain pharmacy they know of that would likely have the oxycodone, just to get it.
Seems like an incredibly cumbersome and difficult process. Judy, back to you. Are doctors receiving the kind of education in med school that they should be on pain management?
Great question. And the answer is no. There was a big study from Johns Hopkins last year of 117 medical schools, and basically doctors get almost no pain education in their whole 4 years of medical school. The average was 9 hours. That's out of 4 years. Mm. Veterinary students even get more.
That's an amazing set of 9 hours out of 4 years.
Out of 4 years.
That's Judy Foreman. She's this week's Common Health guest blogger. She's also a nationally syndicated columnist, and she's working on a book about chronic pain called A Nation in Pain, Healing Our Biggest Health Problem. Judy Foreman, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
And Kiyosha Johnson is an editor and producer for WBUR.org. Kiyosha, thank you for coming in and telling your story.
Thanks.
And you can find a link to both Kiyosha and Judy's Common Health articles on our website, RadioBoston.org. And now, some of your feedback on our recent programs. Our conversation yesterday about college hazing has sparked some interesting comments at RadioBoston.org. JJHGT writes, "Hazing is a part of being in a frat. If you weren't hazed, you weren't in a frat. You were in a social group. Hazing," he says, "is a necessary evil." Commentator Emmanuel drew a comparison between college hazing and basic training techniques in the armed forces. But Yobo 2 disputed that, writing, "I was in the military. Their training techniques are excellent. Drill sergeants are trained not to humiliate the person. They break down the individual, but then build him or her up again as an integral member of the unit." Commentator John was skeptical about that. He responded, "Humiliate the person or break down the individual? This is a distinction without a difference." Listeners, you can keep this conversation going at RadioBoston.org, where you can listen to all of our past programs and comment on anything you'd like. Coming up, how a 19th century Massachusetts doctor helped fuel the ethical debate around the big question, why have children? Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.